hello and welcome to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, kinda, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing well. Shout out to all the dunkers. Thank you for once again embracing your bounce with another bonus pod. I don't know where the energy is going to take us tonight. Nikias has had a bunch of apple juice, tweeted out several all caps tweets. The hashtag is big time, folks. So we're going to see where this takes us. The Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions. And I don't know where we're going to go with this.
You know what? Oddly enough, no apple juice tonight. I think I'm going to grab some tomorrow, in all honesty. So maybe that'll be the day after celebration for Milwaukee winning a title. It's been quite the journey for this Bucks team. We've been talking about them throughout the season, the adjustments that they've made throughout the year, switching up their offensive alignment, you know, shifting from the five out that helped them become one of the better offenses in the NBA over the past two seasons, going with a guy in the dunker spot. You saw the early seeds of adjustments being made throughout the season. Defensively, they switched more. They were more willing to go small. Just laying the groundwork. Their team stats dipped some. The offense wasn't as efficient as years past. The defense wasn't as proficient as years past. But, like, the changes mattered. And it was a gamble for the postseason. They wanted to be prepared to make adjustments if necessary, and we saw that. We saw how effective their deep drop could be against Miami in round one. You saw Brook Lopez playing a little bit higher against the Brooklyn Nets in round two, more willing to switch in that series as well. Atlanta, we saw a mix of everything. In this final series, we saw a mix of everything. Starting the series out, switching, going back to their drop, but incorporating more help just to make the drop more effective, switching when necessary against some of Phoenix's pet actions. It's been a year of adjustments. It's been a year of a calculated gamble on both ends of the floor. And props to this Bucks team for capitalizing, winning that gamble, and ultimately winning a championship this year.
This man is excited, folks. I might be able to go to bed. This Milwaukee season, it's an incredible run, and you have to give them credit for what they accomplished, becoming champions. They did it. You know, Giannis returned to do this. They put this team together to do this. We talked in the regular season about some of the things they were doing adjustment-wise. We saw the rough patches of it. We saw the rough pieces of it. We saw it not work. But it takes guts. It takes a risk to take a team that has such a good base, that has had success, and decide, hey, we're just going to try to do these different things. And I think we all knew the payoff was not going to be in the regular season. The payoff was going to be in the playoffs. And as you mentioned, in each series, they were able to adjust. Now, did they adjust, you know, proactively at times? No, but that doesn't matter. They're champions. They were able to go into their bag and find what worked. And once they found what worked, they kept hammering it home. And there's no greater example than in this series, when you look at the defense they were playing over these four wins compared to the first two losses. This is a team that looked completely lost defensively. They tried literally everything in game one, couldn't stick to anything, overhelping in game two. And all of a sudden, they flipped the series to where they're dictating terms and they're holding strong. The pressure they put on, the ball denials, the consistency, pick and roll defense-wise, the switching, mixing coverages, which is very important, using their personnel wisely, altering the matchup so that they can get the switches they want. They were incredible on that end of the floor, and you have to give them credit for finding a way to put those changes in and then trust them. Because even in this game six, Phoenix had counters, and Milwaukee was able to counter those. Mm-hmm. And put Phoenix right back in the mud, which was the big part. Phoenix couldn't necessarily get loose consistently. So, I mean, salute to Milwaukee for just an incredible, incredible, incredible effort defensively.
Their defense was elite throughout this entire postseason, really. Like, I was still waiting on, NBA.com to update and stuff, but I believe, like, they have the best defensive rating of all playoff teams. Like, just being able to find answers, as you said, like mixing in drop, mixing in more switching, going to zone when necessary, like the full court pressure, sometimes half court pressure, like they throw into random traps. Like they literally tinkered with everything throughout this postseason run and found success at different points of the postseason with all of those adjustments. And offensively, it didn't always look great. Sometimes they would find an answer and not go back to it. Like, I feel like we hammered that point home during the Brooklyn series in particular, where they'd find some answers and then all of a sudden they're just doing random things. It's a Jrue Holiday ISO sometimes. It's Chris Giannis pick and roll with Giannis rolling into three people sometimes. But they would find the hits when they needed to. The left, you know, the Giannis ISOs on the left block, clear on the side. They go to their pet actions late in games where it's a quick pitch to Chris Middleton. He's flowing with Giannis as a screener with an empty corner. Like, they would find those answers and get them when they needed to. So they obviously deserve credit for that. But, man, this has just been – it was a joy to watch this Bucks team this year overall. It got frustrating at points throughout the regular season, like watching them tinker with new things, particularly the switching and just botching easy stuff. Like, you've made points on a few of the podcasts throughout the regular season and the postseason. Guard pick and rolls would just throw Milwaukee for a loop at times, just as a brief example. But just to see a team identify that, hey, what we've been doing is fantastic, is analytically sound. We have a lot of success and we keep hitting a figurative and literal wall. What we're doing isn't working. So we're going to dedicate this season to finding counters, finding answers so we can be more prepared. To see a team dig into that kind of mindset and stick with it throughout and then have it pay off, like, it's a testament to their work ethic. It's a testament to their awareness. It's obviously a testament to their talent. You don't win a championship without talent. And it's just a great story overall. So if you care about the narrative of it all, then this Bucks team is an easy one to root for just because of what they overcame, what, you know, what they put into motion to fix their issues. And it ends in a title. Their first one in, what, 50 years? And this is a great story for a great team.
Well, yeah, you got to give credit to that roster for buying in. You got to give credit to the talent and the players for contributing. I mean, you see in this game six, it was a team effort. Almost every guy who touched the court for Milwaukee had an impact on the game. At different stretches, they needed all of them. I think you got to salute to Coach Budenholzer for going through that kind of adversity, those questions, the doubts, taking the lumps, shifting his philosophy, making the experiments with a proven squad and finding trust. Now, you talked about the offense. At times, they got in their own way. We've talked about it. I won't hammer it home today. But they did trust a style of play. They did trust that they could find a way. They did trust they could generate looks. And they made some huge shots, especially in this series. Every time it felt like Phoenix was coming close to figuring things out process-wise, here comes Milwaukee just hitting shots. Jrue, Middleton, Giannis making the shots. Brook Lopez goes crazy on a stretch, cutting from the weak side. And they had an answer. Every time they needed one, they had an answer. And that was huge because it balances out some of the offensive issues that they may have had where they couldn't find it. I mean, this is a Milwaukee team that went from some of the comments we've made to actually bending defenses and attacking mismatches and attacking pressure points and knowing, mm-hmm. hey, Phoenix doesn't want to switch bridges on Giannis. Let's use him as a screener, put pressure on him that way. Let's, you know, put Ayton in different spots. Let's get Giannis the ball and a handoff, fake handoff. Now he's in the post, left side, ISO, those type of deals. Oh, they switched bridges onto Jrue. Let's get Middleton off the ball. He might have a chance to have some options off ball. Just the little things they did and mixing their spacing. You know, we talk about the dunker spot spacing because, duh. But it wasn't an automatic all the time. Once teams caught on, they started to shift. Different guys were at the dunker spot. Sometimes the floor was spaced. Sometimes the side was empty. So there's a lot of things that they put into it. And while I think they could have hit the buttons sooner, and I think they could have seasoned their food a little bit more, they found it. They found it, and you got to salute them for that team effort. You got to salute Giannis Antetokounmpo, man.
Yes. And that's where I wanted to go next. Like, man, so much of the bag talk surrounding Giannis
Oh, wait, hold on. We're not doing this. Oh, wait. Jeez, please. What are we doing?
Like, this is just my, I just don't want to hear it anymore, man. That's kind of my energy for the rest of the pod. We're going to talk about Phoenix a little bit first.
It's been your energy for the last six pods.
I don't know if that's true. I haven't leaned into it that deeply yet.
Lip dunkers out there, please let me know. This man has said, I don't want to hear it about X at least three podcasts in a row. About Chris Paul, Giannis now, and Chris Middleton. At least three. We saw you.
I'll review the tape. You know, we'll reconvene here. We'll see.
All right, but get back to the bag talk. Because look, I don't want to interrupt too much. Mm-hmm. It's a good vibe. But if this turns into a basketball player versus Hooper conversation, I promise you, I'm clicking this red leave button as soon as I can.
It's not going to turn into this. But again, like, my energy for the rest of this pod sends the Phoenix portion, because they deserve their flowers for the run that they had this year, period. And we'll dig into details on that soon. But Giannis is just absurd, man. He's just an absurd, like, the physical talent is obvious. Like, having that kind of size and then being able to handle the way he does at that size, being able to attack and transition the way that he does at that size, the way he's able to cover ground defensively. Like, it's all very obvious stuff. But, like, there's nuance to Giannis's game that gets overlooked because he isn't a premier jump shooter or isn't a premier perimeter shot creator. And while, like, some of those limitations are fair to point out, it just feels like if you're not just in on Giannis, the conversation surrounding him just goes the other way, to where, like, the talk of Giannis is his limitations instead of talking about those within the context of the larger work of what he is and what he's been able to do. And so I watched this game in which he drops 50. And a lot of it is straight line. I mean, just a lot of driving, a lot of post-ups, a lot of isolation. And so you have that, but I'm looking at how he drives. And there's a possession, I want to say in the third quarter, where he ISOs against DeAndre Ayton. Or he screens and then rolls, gets a pass. DeAndre Ayton is there. DeAndre Ayton is anticipating Giannis going straight up for a layup. So DeAndre Ayton jumps. But instead of going straight up for a layup, which Giannis has finished through Ayton a couple of times, he's finished around him, finished over him, just extending off. But instead of going straight up, he, like, takes another dribble, and then he kind of slows his gather and then goes up for a layup. And it's after DeAndre Ayton had basically jumped out of the plate, anticipating Giannis attacking the basket. And I'm just like, stuff like that is missed because the book on Giannis is he just runs HB dive. And it's a point that I've made earlier in this postseason run that I love watching Giannis drive. Like, you know what's coming. You know he wants to get to the spin that left the right spin, or he wants to get to that Euro step. Feel like he changes the stride length. He changes the cadence in which he's driving. Like, he may not have, like, the Kevin Durant package or whatever. He may not have a Kyrie Irving Jr. package, but he has enough counters, enough nuance to his games to where he can get to what he wants to get to in a variety of ways. And if you're too busy criticizing what he can't do, you miss what he does and how he does it. So, like, he just deserves a lot more credit for how skilled he is. Like, again, it's fair to point out some of the half-court limitations that he has, but, like, he's a champion, a multi-time MVP. He's a finals MVP now. Like, clearly what he has done and what he's been able to do and what he's been able to improve on has worked enough for him to reach the pinnacle of the sport. And so it's long time. I mean, it's time out for that kind of talk with Giannis.
I'm not sure if that ISO was directed at someone or if it was James Harden slander. We'll review the tape and determine at a later date. But I struggle to find the words for what Giannis did tonight. You know, we talked about it. This Giannis, win or lose, he had put his legacy. It was a legacy stamping series for him. And he displayed so much of what you talked about tonight as far as the counters and the nuance. You could put a big on Giannis because he was just going to drive and try and finish over him. And it's different now. Just to add on to what you said with, you know, some of the length, the footwork, what he does with the dribbles, the hesitations, initiating contact in a different way. You know, mm-hmm. It's to the point where you can't even brace for contact you know, put your hands out, it's going to be a foul because he's coming at you, hitting you right in your chest. The ability to eat space against bigs and then go to a post hook. You know, it's not just, hey, I'm driving as fast as I can, I'm just trying to finish over you. No, I'm driving, I'm going to hit you, and then I'm going to go right up. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to hit you, I'm going to fade away. Those were huge adjustments. Because now he has, as you stated, counters. He has different things he can go to. He still got the spin move. How much did he spam the spin move in this series? That's a big jump for him. And so it was just incredible to see him put the team on his back in that way. Mm-hmm. Whether it was dribble handoffs, rolling, crashing the glass, post hooks, fadeaways, the free throw line, 17 for 19. I believe that's more free throws than the Suns made as a team in front of a very, 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 very quiet Milwaukee Bucks home crowd. And then the defense that he displayed.
Man.
In this game, this man was flying around all over the place. How many days ago was it that it looked like his season was done?
Mm-hmm.
And he's blocking so many shots. I mean, he's all over the place defensively. The work that he put in against Chris Paul was a series changer. The work that he did as far as help defense goes, the activity that he showed was just incredible. I mean, this is a guy, he 50, 14 and 5 on 25 shots to win a championship. Do they even know who the last person to do that was?
Got to wait for the Elias Sports Bureau to post that one out because good Lord.
They got to wait to try and figure it out. Blocks ain't been around that long.
What is it, 73, 74, whatever it is?
Like, I mean, it's – and you got to – like, it's – you got to root for him in a sense. You know, not rah-rah, but the story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go too far narrative-wise, but it was just – fun to see him have that moment from where he started to now, to the growth, the work that he put in his game, trusting himself, trusting his team, trusting his city, to be able to have this kind of series and to pay off your words. You know, when you say, do you want to stay in Milwaukee to win? Mm-hmm. You know, you're sitting there, man's hyped, cursing. It was incredible. Only thing we're missing was Thanasis, man. I was bummed there was no Thanasis. That was a perfect time and nowhere to be found.
Health and safety protocols got him. That's just
hope
just
he's
super
right.
Unfortunate. Yeah.
Hope that's he's unfortunate. All right.
That would have been his that would have been his moment. I would love to see those two celebrate together.
Oh man. But nah, Giannis, what else can be said? What else can be said? He's a legend now. I'll say it.
That's
a legendary series right there.
Legendary run for him. Like MVP caliber play during the regular season. Didn't win it, obviously. But MVP caliber play on both ends of the floor, despite experimenting with his own offensive game, dealing with the offensive changes that were implemented scheme-wise from Milwaukee, was still a dominant help defender. Not quite the level at what he was last year when he won Defensive Player of the Year. But still very much a high-level help defender. Had more on-ball responsibility with Milwaukee switching more this year. And, you know, the theme for the Bucks was carried over for Giannis. Like, all of that translated to the regular season, to the postseason. When he needed to sprinkle in those jump hooks, when he needed to go to his post fade, when he needed to go to the mid-range jumper, when he needed to knock down threes, though the volume kind of went the other way sometimes, he had it when he needed it. And defensively, when he had to fight over screens and drop, when he had to switch out onto guards, namely Chris Paul in this series, he was ready to do so. When he had to play more five and anchor in the drop or just switch out and blow up actions, he was able to do all of that. And just, you know, the back end of his postseason run coming after hyperextended knee, it's absurd. Like, we know that defense isn't all about steals and blocks, but like the blocks that he had throughout this run were incredible. Like so many chase down blocks in transition. Like it's, you can't lose that guy. It doesn't matter where he starts a transition possession defensively. he will get back and challenge the shot. You may still make a tough layup. You may get the dunk in before he's able to swat your shot away. But he's going to be there. The amount of ground that he is able to cover defensively might just be my favorite part of Giannis's game. Just watching him navigate, help in the half court, watching him track down guys in transition. That guy is, he's one of the best players I've ever seen. He is already an all-timer at 26. Two MVPs, a Defensive Player of the Year award, a championship, a finals MVP, multiple all-NBA first team selections, multiple all-defensive team, all-first defensive team selections. He's already an all-timer. And he's just entering his physical prime. Like, this season was such a big one in terms of, like, half-court development and developing counters. And he's not there yet. He's still not there yet. And he dropped 50 in a closeout finals game to bring this home. And if this is the version of Giannis that we're seeing now, and he's still working at it, he wants to work at it. It's terrifying to think about what he can be next season or the season after that, or just moving forward in general. It is a terrifying thought that not only can he get better, he's going to get better. That's just the work ethic he has. I'm excited to watch him play more basketball. Like, to see him get over this kind of hump, and there are still clear areas for him to improve that he's been actively working on. Like, I'm ready to see what his trajectory looks like. That's kind of where I'm at with Giannis.
Well, folks, if that's what we're getting for Giannis, I cannot wait to hear where this man goes with Chris Middleton. There's no format sheet. It's a vibe right now. I'm ill prepared for what he's about to say about Chris Middleton. So I'm just going to dribble handoff and cut to the corner.
Wow. That seems a bit dramatic, but, you know, I'll let you have it. But
it just ruined my buildup like that.
Oh, man, I'm joking, though. But I'm very happy for Chris Middleton and his journey. Like, mid-second round pick. Was in the D League at that point. Had a stretch in the D League. He gets traded from Detroit as a throw-in of the, I guess, infamous Brandon Jennings, Brandon Knight trade. He was a throw-in in the deal, and he becomes a pillar in Milwaukee. Like, was Milwaukee's best player before Giannis blew up. And found his way as a number two option alongside Giannis, improved as a shot creator, improved as a shooter, was already a strong shooter, but improved in both, improved as a playmaker, improved as a defender. Mike Budenholzer get there, his role shifts, has to take a bit of a backseat. Early analytical approach for Mike Budenholzer, threes and rim shots. Middleton has the early discomfort trying to find his way, eventually finds a middle ground with Mike Budenholzer, makes his first all-star appearance, makes another all-star game, has developed into one of the best shot creators in the league, despite not being able to generate a bunch of separation. Like, it doesn't take much for him to get his shot off, and he's one of the most efficient shooters on the planet. So I just kind of find it funny. Like, the discourse around Chris Middleton has always been kind of weird, because you would think a guy like that would just get his flowers. Because he wasn't supposed to be here at all. Again, I think 40th pick of his draft. Trade as a throw-in, becomes not just a starter, but becomes an all-star. Like, you would think that would just be a guy you root for. But, like, the consensus never really got there with him. And part of that was because people were still trying to figure out, okay, how far can Giannis lead a team? And with that, if Giannis is your lead guy, how far can, you know, Chris Middleton take you as well, if he's your number two? And a lot of that's been, you know, how good is Chris Middleton as a number two? Like, that was a lot of smoke that was surrounding Giannis's impending free agency. Like, if he's going to leave Milwaukee, he needs a better supporting cast. And that's indirectly a shot at Chris Middleton. Like, he wasn't deemed good enough. So it's dope to see not only Giannis have this moment, but, you know, Chris Middleton dropped a 40 ball in the finals game. Chris Middleton has consistently, like, he's been that number two guy. think averaged 20 in each series throughout this postseason.
He's been great. I'm just going to jump in here real quick. I do want to add he did have some horrific shooting playoff series. So continue. No hate. Throwing a little context out there.
Look at the wet blanket here. What's going on here? But no, you're absolutely right. Like, he absolutely did have some stinkers mixed in there. And, you know, part of the questions about him being a number two option also came with the consistency, because he could, you know, as the joke goes on Twitter, he could turn into basically MJ. You're referencing some of the playoff games he had against Boston early in his career. And he would also throw out, he'd have a 3-for-17. He'd have a 5-for-20. He would have these stretches to where the lack of separation that he would create in isolation would fall down the offense if he didn't have a shot going. Like, he's a tough shot maker. And the downside of being a tough shot maker is that your shots are tough. If they don't go in, you're not really helping your offense. So that's definitely part of the story with him. But he was more good than bad. And he came through in a lot of clutch moments for Milwaukee throughout this run. And so it's nice to see him have this moment, kind of cap off his journey in a way. And his career isn't done, obviously. But just to see that kind of growth. Because even in the early stages of, you know, his Milwaukee career, like, he wasn't this as a shot creator. He certainly wasn't this as a playmaker. So to see, you know, fast forward to now where the Chris Middleton Giannis pick and roll is arguably Milwaukee's most dangerous half court action, with Chris initiating action. Like, and even later in the series, like, Phoenix got to a point to where, okay, we're going to throw two to the ball against Chris Middleton. Let's see if we can force him into mistakes. Like, the fact that he's even garnering that kind of attention, or Phoenix was willing to try to make that kind of bet just to throw off the floor of the offense, is a testament to how good Chris Middleton has gotten. And I am glad that he's a champion. Like, it's a great story for him.
Couldn't tell. I think this playoff run, Chris Middleton did an incredible job of shot making. And it's not a surprise. He's a tough shot maker. We know his game. But every time, it almost felt like every time they needed him to hit one, he hit it. And you talk about the two on the ball, I don't want to say he made every shot, but he made a ton of those shots that defenses say, hey, we'll live with that. Mm-hmm. Make it tough on him. Keep him in front. Contest. Don't give up anything else. We'll live with it. And it got to the point where you couldn't live with it. And that started to bend things. And because he made that many shots, it opened so many things up. I mean, you look at Phoenix, they just never could get comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. Even when he was missing, as he did, I think, after the first quarter, I think, quarters 2 through 4 before that stretch weren't so great. Mm-hmm. I already had my notes lined up for that one, but still came through and made those buckets at the end. It's I think part of the issue with Middleton is his makes should jump off the page. They should garner respect. They're tough buckets. They're pull-ups. They're contested. But his misses, when he misses them, it looks like the same shot. So it's like, what are you doing? It's a bad shot. But that's his game. That's who he is. So you got to salute him for making that run. Like, he lifted that Bucks team in so many different ways. And for him to not just garner attention to put two on the ball, but to consistently make the right plays. Like, they're putting two on the ball because they don't think you can make the read. Like, they don't want you to shoot, but they also don't think, hey, we'll live with whatever you do. Mm-hmm. They couldn't live with either. So it made it very difficult. So salute to Chris Middleton for winning an NBA championship. And hopefully you can stop arguing with whoever said that he can't be a number two on a title team. Clearly, we got to have a discussion about who did that to you.
It's done, man. It's done. That is super done. I guess one little nugget before we move off of Middleton. Like, I have been on the Middleton bandwagon for a while, so this has just been fun for me to track. But what is the face here?
You don't say.
Oh, okay, I see.
Man pulled up a tweet from 2011.
Okay, it was from 2011, but that was what I was about to reference. I was like, I know, like, the official Middleton stance from me came in like 2015, 2016. I couldn't remember exactly what year it was. So I did some Twitter searching and found a tweet from now defunct site that I was writing at that point, but found a tweet from September 18th of 2015 to where I was talking about Chris Middleton and the improvement he made as a shot creator at that time. So to fast forward 6 years and he's now a champion. Many Twitter arguments later, I am absolutely feeling vindicated right now. Chris Middleton is a champion.
Good for him.
Whoa. How dare you? You know what? While we're here, we'll go to one note of negativity here before we shift to Phoenix and then go back to Milwaukee because they are the champions. They're going to get much of the talk on this podcast episode. But Jeff Teague played a minute and 43 seconds. All right, so Phoenix, huh?
Go ahead and finish. Go ahead and finish the Jeff Teague. Go ahead and finish the layup. Go ahead. No,
it's all right. It's all right. Time expired. It's fine.
Minus four, minus five. What was it?
I'll let you pull up the box score. It's fine. What a run for the Phoenix Suns. What a run for Devin Booker. What a year of growth for Mikal Bridges. What a year for Chris Paul. And we'll definitely get into some Chris Paul talk. Because I feel like the plot is starting to be a little bit lost with him.
Oh, Lord. I thought this was going to be a short pod.
This is the dunker spot. What do you mean? Our shortest pod is I think 51 minutes is the shortest pod we've had. And that was a game reaction in which we talked about a whole bunch of scheme stuff. We don't do short here. It's fine. It's our brand. People love it. I hope. Shout out to those 5-star reviews. But a year of growth for DeAndre Ayton really came out in this postseason. Phoenix leaned on him a lot in this series. Which some of that speaks to the roster construction, but largely it speaks to how good and important he is on both ends of the floor for that team. He's had one heck of a year. The growth from Cam Johnson, the resurgence from campaign this year. Monty Williams coached his butt off all season and all postseason long. I just don't think, like, I know, I also recognized I'm like in my own Twitter bubble. So like I understand sometimes the conversation is national, sometimes it's just my bubble. But like I don't think there should be any sort of negative spin to what Phoenix was able to do this year or even how the series ended. Like even with Milwaukee winning four straight, Milwaukee won those games. Milwaukee countered what Phoenix wanted to do. And Phoenix came with more counters and Milwaukee countered those too. Like it should be testament to Milwaukee, not Phoenix is a fraud, or we don't have to get into any of that with Phoenix. They deserve nothing but praise for what they were able to do this season.
Oh, no. They had an unbelievable run. They got through the Western Conference. I think, unfortunately, people are going to point to who they faced when they faced them injuries to try and discredit that run, which I personally don't think is as fair because of how they won those series and how they were able to figure things out on both ends of the floor and kind of dictate the pace, taking the punches from Denver and then deciding, hey, you can't guard us. We're going to cut you up in a million different ways, figuring out the Clippers' small lineups, the zone lineups, and finding a way to win that series. And then they competed their tails off in this series. This was a great finals. Mm-hmm. This was a great finals. I mean, the swings we had game to game, the last four, you could flip a coin. Phoenix could have easily pulled this off. They didn't, but they fought even after that first quarter to take control of this game. Took a lot, and they were continuing to try and make adjustments all the way down to the end. Just to sprinkle some game six talk in there. I mean, they found a way to get Chris Paul loose after all those games where they weren't able to get him loose. They went from high pick and rolls that weren't working, and double drags that weren't working, to staggered pick and roll. We're going to screen one, you're going to switch, and then we're going to have Ayton screen at the elbow, and now Lopez in a drop, and up, pull up. But they secretly got him going. That was big. Mm-hmm. The performances they were able to get from Devin Booker by using him in different ways, that was big. The buy-in they had from the whole team. you know, Jay Crowder and Mikal Bridges weren't able to have the same impact offensively in this finals consistently, but they were huge as far as punishing defenses all year long once they got in rotation. And then the bench, you know, you talked about Cam Payne, talked about Cam Johnson, Dario Saric, salute to Frank Kaminsky. Don't want to talk about his plus minus, do you? It was zero. Don't worry about it. I salute the Suns. I salute Monty Williams for putting that team together and putting them in a position to have that level of belief to make that kind of run, where this is a team that was built for the playoffs on both ends of the floor, and they showcased that. Fortunately, they came up short. It was one of those situations where they couldn't necessarily find the answer consistently, and Milwaukee went ahead and won those games, and that was that.
That it was, that it was. I am just... I'm just going back to Paul for a moment. Like, I'm kind of anticipating, I hate using the word narrative, but you know, I feel the narrative shifting back with Paul. Like, it's been a weird year to track for Phoenix. Like, not necessarily for us, because we've been watching Phoenix and digging into what they do on both ends of the floor and who's been responsible for that. So, like, we've had a solid handle on who this Phoenix team is. And I would say, I would imagine, like, neither of us were surprised that Phoenix was able to make this kind of run, just because of the talent that they've had, the cohesiveness that they've played with on both ends of the floor. And yes, you can point to some of the injuries that they had, that their opponents had to deal with, and that played a part. But ultimately, this was a Phoenix team that was elite on both ends of the floor, literally all season long. There was nothing fluky about what they did. I've made the point on early episodes of this podcast and other guest pods that I've done. Like, reason why I was so high on Phoenix throughout the regular season was because they were playing, you know, stylistically, they were basically playing postseason basketball all year long. So I just was not concerned about them forgetting how to play once the lights got brighter or whatever. But I feel like they have a good enough mix of veterans between Jay Crowder, who's has a ton of playoff experience and just came off a finals run, between Chris Paul, who is a vet of all vets, to be kind. Like, I just wasn't worried about the moment getting too big for them. And sure enough, they were able to overcome their own stuff. Like, Chris Paul dealt with multiple injuries throughout this postseason run. Bounced back from them, struggled at other times, was able to fight through for the most part. Strong postseason run for Chris Paul overall. Had some down moments in this finals. Like, Jrue Holiday absolutely hounded that man. The turnovers became a problem after the first two games of the series. Fair to point that out. But, like, some of the slander I feel like Paul's going to get, as, you know, he did not perform as well as Devin Booker did in the back half of the series. Very clear. But some of the backlash is going to be, like, based on some of the crowning that Paul got for the regular season, when there was so much more going on in Phoenix than Paul. Like, we talked about it on this pod, as much as I love Chris Paul and as much as I love what Chris Paul's done for this finals, for this Suns team, it was weird seeing, like, him have this MVP push during the regular season, because it seemed to miss everything that was going on with the Suns team. And for me personally, like, you're missing what made this Suns team fun for me. Like, you can't deny what Chris Paul brings as a playmaker, as a shot creator, particularly in the mid-range, as a shooter, even at this stage as a defender, not who he used to be, but incredibly smart, can still be pesky at the point of attack, can still help, can still draw charges. But, like, you just miss what Mikal Bridges does defensively. Still don't understand how he didn't make an offensive team this year, but whatever. Just... you miss what he did. You miss the growth from DeAndre Ayton defensively. Him in the second half of the season, specifically playing with more force offensively, doing big man things, doing very simple things, but doing it more consistently and more effectively. Running the floor, sealing off his man, punishing late switches on the offensive glass. Like, you miss that portion of it. You miss the shot making from Cam Johnson. You miss what Cam Payne was able to do off the bench. You miss the playmaking and the shooting Dario Saric provides. And so you miss all of that stuff, and you look for the easy answer for why Phoenix is good all of a sudden. And the easy answer was, you know, Devin Booker is obviously very good, But the easier answer from like a national perspective became, oh, Chris Paul. Like, he just helped lead a Thunder team that wasn't supposed to make the playoffs to the playoffs and push Houston to seven. Now he joins Phoenix and all of a sudden they're really good. So clearly he's the reason he's the MVP. And so now you have that, and then fast forward to the finals, and he has, you know, the first two games. He has the terrific game one. He has a good game two. And I even make the tweet, like, huh, we're two games away from a Chris Paul finals MVP. Like 10% leading into the bit, but also he was really playing very well. And once that slipped, partially because of him, partially because of injury, mostly because of what Milwaukee did defensively, now it's turning into Chris Paul's the playoff rod. And it would be nice to find some middle ground between all of that. And I think that starts with watching what's happening on the floor and being able to examine what's happening on the floor so we don't get too high or too low with any of this stuff. But all in all, your facial expressions are killing me right now. But all in all, like, I have had a ton of fun watching Chris Paul this year. I've written about him a couple of times this year. We've talked about him on the pod quite often. Like, this Suns team in general was just a fantastic watch. And I don't know if it's fair to call them like a blueprint for a team kind of in the middle or on the playoff fringes making a leap. But like, they're certainly going to become a team that other teams in the West or just in general are going to aspire to reach. Like, hey, if they can do this, let's see if we can find our guy or our mix of guys and get our mix of internal development and see if we can make that kind of leap too. Don't know how realistic that is, but I can definitely see them becoming kind of a template there. The Suns deserve their flowers for what they were able to do this year.
I think the hashtag is big man, folks. I mean, people are going to take the shots they want to take. That's just how the world works. If they want to call Chris Paul a fraud because they were up 2-0 and lost, I mean, people are going to do that. For me, I thought Milwaukee just did a great job of keeping him out of rhythm. And as the series progressed, it was very tough for him to get to some of the same exploits, especially during the three-game stretch between game two and tonight. I thought the full court pressure did what it was supposed to do as far as taking him out of rhythm, not letting him get to his spots. And then that just forced Phoenix to set higher screens, which, you know, he still couldn't get to his spots then, or they would switch Giannis onto him. Connaughton held up enough. Bobby Portis started to hold up enough. So he started to run out of the exploits, and it never felt like he was able to kind of be that maestro as far as having different options that he could go to and play with the defense in that way. You know, he was kind of to either force a drive or force a shot up or, you know, get a rescreen or fight late in the clock, those kind of things, to where it was just tougher than it had to be. So I don't necessarily point the finger at Chris Paul. Unless, I mean, there were some times where he could have been more assertive, mm-hmm. I thought. But outside of that, I mean, that's Chris Paul's game. He's always kind of been a little bit of a data collector. And strike when the time is right or strike when the team is needed. He just couldn't get there at certain times bridge-wise. Mm-hmm. You know, you go back to the game Devin Booker had. They probably just needed a couple pull-ups from Chris Paul that night when Devin Booker went out of the lineup and they didn't fall. Mm-hmm. And then that's part of his game. So I still salute him. That's a heck of a run to make the finals. I'm sure this loss has to sting at a level. But they got there, and that should validate the process. What they do next is anyone's guess, but definitely salute to the Suns. You really not going to apologize to Frank Kaminsky, though?
What?
I mean, switching on to Giannis.
He did his best. Good for him.
Oh, man.
But it was... Hey, I am in a good mood. Surely you didn't think there was going to be a good for him on this podcast. Got to drop one for all time's sake. Like, this is the last pod of the 2020-21 NBA season. Like, you know, we aren't going anywhere, but like, this is, you know, this is the caper. So, you know, got to come with the with the hits. Got a good for him. Got a big mad.
Oh boy, PJ Tucker. That should be celebrated. His path for him to be an NBA champion, for the work that he put in this series, for Milwaukee to stick with him in the starting lineup. Because yeah. I think we all understood why he was in the starting lineup when he was put in the starting lineup. But they just kept rolling with it, which I thought spoke to what kind of what Milwaukee does. Well, we found something. Let's keep it rolling. Mm-hmm. And he continued to have an impact as far as guarding multiple positions, ball pressure, denying offensive glass. You know, the box score is not going to look like anything, but he had an impact. He put his stamp on this series. So salute to PJ Tucker. Were you surprised by how he performed during these playoffs, during this finals run?
Not particularly. Like, I think most of my surprise came with, like you said, him staying in the starting lineup. Like we talked about it as we previewed these conference finals. Like, this is probably when they shift back to Pat Connaughton, I believe. Because, like, I don't think there's a quote-unquote PJ matchup in this series. And Milwaukee stuck with it. And PJ found his role, particularly on the offensive glass. Like, okay, I know what I do on offense. I'm going to stand in the corner. I'm going to chill the dunker spot. That provides a natural, quote-unquote, hiding spot for stars. You know, in the Atlanta series, it was Trae Young. In the finals, like, it was a lot of Chris Paul on PJ Tucker. And PJ Tucker just blasted both of those guys, figuratively and literally, just crashing the glass, cutting random cuts, getting some timely layups. Didn't have it tonight, but just cutting in, getting those, getting offensive rebounds. He had 6 boards tonight, 2 offensive tonight, just checking the box score right now. But, like, he just did little things like that. And made, you know, throughout the postseason run, overall made timely corner threes. Like, that's all they needed him to do. And he hit enough of those to remain effective. Defensively, I was worried about the screen navigation for him because that's not what he does best defensively. Obviously, effort's never going to be an issue for him. And IQ and positioning is never going to be an issue for him. It's just, can you navigate screens? Because he's very much an ISO guy, mirror you, or, you know, use his strength, the lower center of gravity, depending on who he's guarding, use his strength and hold his own on the block. Like, the way that he defended pick and rolls against Kevin Durant in the second round, got some Trae Young possessions on switches in the Eastern Conference Finals, was defending Bogdan Bogdanovic in the Eastern Conference Finals when they would run floppy or they would run some Chicago action. Like, he's navigating those screens, and I'm just kind of like wincing watching him. Like, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not, but Milwaukee stuck with it. And you look at the finals again, he's defending Chris Paul, like, early in the series, a lot of automatic switches. They started the series with PJ Tucker on Chris Paul just so they could switch those 1-5 pick and rolls. So, like, he spent time on Paul, he spent time on Ayton, he fronted sometimes he was behind him. He did that, he got the Devin Booker assignment, you know, those baseline screening actions that you've been mentioning throughout this entire postseason run for Phoenix. Hounding Devin Booker on those, contributing to Phoenix playing a little slower than even they wanted to, disrupting their rhythm. PJ Tucker was a major part of all of that. And so he absolutely deserves his flowers. I mean, it was just a long journey for him in general, but like a weird season for him just because of the turmoil going on in Houston. Like we talked about in the last pod.
Houston Rockets slander?
I don't know if it's slander, but I mean, they go into the season with Russ and James Harden. They end the season with neither of them. And Tucker, longtime Rocket, he's basically been fighting for a new contract for, 2 years now, 3 years now in Houston, ends up getting a trade, goes to Milwaukee, makes an impact. And so going to be interested to see what his free agency is going to look like this offseason. But all in all, like, he's played for a ton of teams. He played a ton of different styles. He's played in a ton of different, and he's played in different countries throughout his basketball career. Like, it's great to see him get a ring for the work that he's put in. And he was very important to this Milwaukee's team.
I have a 2-part question for you.
Okay.
Take this off the train tracks real quick.
All right.
How much of this finals do you think Eric Bledsoe watched?
Can't be much. Can't be much.
Slash, how do you think he feels right now?
I don't think he wants to be here.
It's a good shot.
There we go.
Drew Holiday. Man, he made some big time buckets.
What a segue. That's great. This is why you're on the podcast. This is great.
A plus material over here. the shots he made, man. The box score never ever looked great for most of the time, but the shots he made in Brooklyn, the pull up three he made in game six, start of the fourth, I think, like the defense that he put together, the defense. Like, I mean, that they made that trade and it looked like a whole bunch, but I mean, you won. Mm-hmm. So
you secured Giannis. That was the win right there.
You kept him, you won, and you got a salute to Drew Holiday. I mean, he never wavered to me offensively. He never wavered. He stayed aggressive. I'm sure there are people who thought he was a little too aggressive. I'm sure there were people who thought maybe he was taking some difficult shots. Uh-huh. But when you look at the value he gave as a driver, when you look at the value he gave defensively, and his ability to just play whatever role was needed, that's some big time stuff. And, you know, it's awesome to see him get that shot. Awesome for Brook Lopez as well, mm-hmm. who found his way. He did his job. He avoided the liability zone. Whatever was asked, he adjusted. You know, when they tried to switch him, it didn't work. He adjusted back to his drop. They didn't get to a level. He got back to that. Wasn't involved offensively. All of a sudden, he starts doing the weak side cuts like he did against Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And still getting to his little hook float shot. That's awesome. It's all awesome. The awesome podcast. Also, salute to Pat Connaughton for just being on fire from three until the game-clinching win. I think he was shooting 50% until tonight, where he went 0-for-4 and was a minus 21 in 23 minutes.
Was not great for Pat Connaughton. Did have two offensive rebounds today.
We've come a long way. You did call him Pat Connaughton earlier in the series.
Did I call him Pat Connaughton or did you call him Pat Connaughton?
It was based on your commentary.
Okay. That seems like a very different thing. But... Oh man, I'm glad that we got this finals. I mean, we joked about it before the finals started that I was going to be happy either way because Chris was going to win a ring, and that's still very much true. I'm in a good place. Like I would have been fine if Phoenix pushed it to 7-1. I'm cool, more than cool, honestly. But I'm good with Chris Middleton and the Milwaukee Bucks winning a ring this year. But like. I just love these two teams, man. Like, what Phoenix was able to accomplish on both ends of the floor, the coaching job from Monty, the growth from Booker, Chris Paul became a bit of a meme during the later half of the season, but Chris Paul's leadership was important. But again, Mikal Bridges, just a joy to watch all year. DeAndre Ayton, a joy to watch this year. Watch him grow. Not going to go through that laundry list again, but like, this was just a fun team to watch.
Did you just go with the Chris Paul as a leader meme? Look, I promise you, if your next question is basketball player or hooper, it's over. It's going to be the dunk in spot.
I mean, you know, with Giannis, you know, I feel it's...
can we talk about Bobby Portis high-stepping and getting a technical foul?
Forgotten moment
that could have cost them the game and would have been hilarious, but instead, Bobby Chance in a final celebration.
Yeah, he high-stepped like he was, you know, the 20, the 10, the 5.
I think my favorite part is it definitely looked like they did not want to tee him up, and he just kept going. Like, he just kept going. Like, there was like, all right, cool. But he, like, didn't stop at half court. He went all the way down, and it was like, all right, man. I got to tee you up.
got to do it like tentatively. No, you got to kind of have the little fingers out there, back up a little bit. Like, hey, I'm sorry, but you don't want to. You know, we ain't got to dig too deep into that. But yeah, the tee was given, and Milwaukee was able to overcome anyway. So
they overcame Slam Crowder.
That's still weighing on you.
I'm upset.
That's shout out to Jay Crowder for making two straight finals on two different teams.
About to be a third.
I guess we'll see.
No, that's one of those things you just say, and then if it happens, you just run it back. Like, look, I told y'all.
Fair enough. He's going to pull the Pat McCall, but actually have an impact. It's going to be great.
Pat McCall slander?
I don't even think that's slander. It's just funny that he was on like consecutive title teams and was just not a, you know, he didn't start.
Let me check his age real quick.
What do you, this is not slander. Go on, what you got? What is he, 26? 27?
He's 25. This is not track. Also, UNLV running rebel. You need to apologize.
Oh, okay. That's why I struck a nerve. I got you. We have done it. So happy for Milwaukee, man. What a run for them. This is a fun postseason for me. And I would imagine for you as well, as someone that has watched a ton of basketball this year. So you fully appreciate what these teams do. And it was amped for the matchups in each series because you understood what they did and didn't do. And while the stylistic clashes were fun and stuff.
I mean, that's the fun of the playoffs. You watch these teams, you learn what they're trying to do. You see what other teams are trying to take away. And you see how those series shift, how those series get won. You see Milwaukee have to adjust from series to series and find their way. That's what makes it more fun, their championship run, because you saw them struggle with certain things. You saw them struggle defensively. You saw them struggle offensively. They still found their balance. You saw Phoenix have that impact on their run offensively, and now you see Milwaukee starting to take that away. So, you know, that's the first, like, every time, you know, I think the Lakers got them, Clippers got them for a little bit, but they hadn't necessarily faced that kind of adversity. So that made that part of it fun. Like, when you watch those little things and you pick up on them, it makes it more enjoyable to see what's happening and understand it. And then you don't have to just look at the box score and talk. You know, you don't have to just be like, oh, man, Cam Johnson had a terrible game tonight, 1-for-5. You don't have to do that.
It's true, because it's very obvious when you're doing that to the people that are watching the games and you know, in some cases, are rewatching the games.
It's a bad year to not watch games.
It was, in fact, a bad year to watch games. What I will say as we close this thing out, again, we aren't done podcasting at all, but I will say, I am sure. So wow. I'm sorry if that disappointed you, but oh man, I would just like to say, Steve, it has been a pleasure doing this podcast with you.
Oh, I got kicked off?
No, you are not getting kicked off. Now, if a team rightfully steals you away, then I just got to kind of take my L there. But
you'll be all right.
Until that happens, no, I genuinely want to show my appreciation for what you provide to this podcast, what you provide to the dunkers out there. Like, your expertise is incredibly valuable. Like, I've learned a ton from you, not just on this podcast, but since I've known you, since I followed you. Like, I met you at Summer League, I want to say 2 years ago. I finally got to have a small conversation in a very crowded area. Shout out to the pre-COVID days. But it's been, I really appreciate what you provide, the advice that you've given me throughout the past few years. Like, I'm really glad that you do this podcast with me. We're all better off for it.
Thanks, man. An incredible moment I was not prepared for. I appreciate it. It's been a very fun ride. Thanks for having me. You could have picked anyone in the world, but you picked me. I don't know why. But it's been fun to kind of just be able to talk about the games and know that people are actually watching and appreciating and picking up on things based on what they hear from us and looking forward to hearing what we say about certain things or if we point certain things out. Like, that's the fun part of it for me. It's all about impact. So thank you. You must have gotten a big check.
No, man, I just it's always important to make people feel appreciated. Like I want you to know, like I do not take any of the information that you've imparted to me, like on the timeline, in the DMs, on this podcast, I don't take any of it for granted. Like I'm very much better at what I do because of you. So I really do appreciate you. Please don't leave unless you get hired. It's kind of the only thing I have to say on that front.
Is there a rumor I don't know about?
I mean, there was that tweet earlier this postseason. You know, I don't know. I got to make sure I give you your flowers before the address changes. You know, I just want to be sure we're still good.
We're good. It's been like 6 years, man. All right.
Just got to be sure. You never know.
I got the Omri Caspi forced retirement.
Not the Omri Caspi slander. And you talk about me. Thank you for listening to the final episode of the 2020-21 season from the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. We are there and we'll continue to be there. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later.
Who has a slower Euro step, Brook Lopez or Kyle Anderson?